Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hi, I'm Andy Murray, and you're listening to The Tennis Podcast.
Well, hello and welcome to the Tennis Podcast, brought to you in association with The Telegraph and Eurosport, who have exclusive television rights in the UK. My name is David Law. I'm joined by Catherine Whittaker of Eurosport on day one of the Australian Open. Is it still day one? It's not anymore, is it, Catherine Whittaker? Because it's 20 past midnight, which means it's effectively day two. How's your day one been?
It certainly doesn't feel like it's still day one. It's been really good, long, as you can probably tell from my voice, not from yours, David, because you're just a bundle of energy this week, but certainly from mine. But it's been pretty great, hasn't it? It's a bit warm, but lovely.
No, it's been all right. But I mean, in terms of the stuff that we've witnessed today, I mean, just to set the scene very quickly, we're sitting out at the moment outside. I mean, it shows how nice the climate is when the sun has gone down a little bit, because we're sitting outside under black skies and with floodlights all around, next to the Margaret Court Arena and one of the outside courts as well. Looking into the floodlights, you see just thousands of little flies flying around the place. And
Little flies.
What are they then?
They look like sort of dinosaur birds to me. They look like pterodactyls.
Right, I'm off. But anyway, that sets the scene a little bit, Catherine Whittaker. But other than that, it's deserted. This is Garden Square, where all the crowds congregate to watch on the big screen. And my goodness, they've had a lot to enjoy today. Upsets, big names in trouble, the return of Roger Federer. Let's start with Roger Federer. I mean, there will be lots of people listening to this who are not necessarily Roger Federer fans.
I but wouldn't go so far as to say lots. There will be a few, but I don't think there will be lots. Do you know many that aren't? Do you know many human beings that aren't Roger Federer fans? I know they exist and they're entitled to their opinions, but there aren't lots.
I suppose what I'm getting at is that there are, say, Andy Murray fans or Rafael Nadal fans who wouldn't count themselves as Federer fans.
It doesn't have to be that fans. Tribal, does it?
Is it not, though?
Well, I mean, I know it can be, but I don't see it that way. I mean, yes, you know, when you're sort of 15, I suppose you're a enormous fan of one person at the exclusion of everyone else. But I think being a Roger Federer fan is not, and you know, I don't think Federer would want it to be at the exclusion of everyone else, would he? He doesn't want it to be like that. It's all about peace and love, isn't it?
No, probably right, Catherine Whittaker. Anyway, as I was about to say before you went on that little rant, basically, my sense is that no matter who your favourite player is, I think it was anybody would be happy to have seen him back tonight. Particularly, I mean, I think that there's very much a desire from his perspective to finish his career on his terms and to finish it in a certain way. And I think most people would want that for him as well. Tonight, he was playing against a fellow 35-year-old. I mean, it was not plain sailing. There were 70 years worth of tennis player out there tonight. Both of them playing beautifully. I mean, they could have been on the senior tour at that age, but here they were on the Rod Laver Arena, duking it out. Jürgen Meltzer, who incidentally won the Wimbledon boys title the year after Roger Federer won the Wimbledon boys title. So they've shared a lot of time over the years, but Federer certainly, I mean, he looked chuffed to be out there for a start. I mean, that was one of his lines, wasn't it? We'll hear from Roger Federer in a moment or two from the press conference, in which I managed to get a couple of questions to him, and he talks about just how happy he is to be out there. But generally speaking, what did you make of his level? He was a set and 3-2 up, then the wheels came off a little bit and he lost four games in a row, one set all, but then won relatively straightforwardly in the end.
I think his level was fine. I think he was rusty. I think I think he'll give himself a, you know, 6.5 out of 10, which he would have taken before the match. Anecdote about before the match coming up shortly in the tennis podcast. Don't tune out anyone, because this is a good one.
Oh, what's that?
Well,
no, it's all right. No, you can tell me when you're ready. So what else? 6.5 out of 10, you thought?
Yeah, about 6.5 out of 10. I thought Jürgen Meltzer played really, really well. So let's not make it all about Roger Federer. He played really well, gave a good account of himself. And, yeah, age-wise, there's nothing in it. It was just the golf and talent, I suppose. You know, talent takes Roger Federer so, so far, doesn't it? And, yeah, he was rusty. There were errors there that were uncharacteristic, but he's still Roger Federer. I thought his movement was good, which is probably the most critical thing,
particularly given what happened to him last year, that it was a knee problem that was preventing him from playing the sport. So that, you know, when you consider, and we sit in our commentary box on BBC Radio 5 Live, we sit court level, literally knee height to the players, just behind the players at one end, and you get to see the stress on their joints when they're jerking side to side and screeching to a stop, and you hear the squeak of their shoes on the cement, and that must have been a concern for a while in his training period before he started playing again.
Oh, without question. He's never, we've talked about it a lot, haven't we, that he's never had to deal with any major injury, and I'm not sure he's quite gone so far as to explicitly confess this, but he's certainly implied. And everybody now, I think, accepts and realises that he pushed himself too far too soon. He did come back a bit early and didn't manage his recovery from surgery and from injury brilliantly. And it did cause him to have that, in the end, that long layout. But, oh, it's the most uplifting sight to see him back. The second on a tennis court, the second most uplifting sight is wandering into the interview garden, which is it's a very overglorious name for what is essentially a sort of 5 meter square patch of astroturf. Wandering into the interview garden, expecting to find Dan Evans, or expecting to get there and wait a few minutes for Dan Evans' arrival, and in fact, quite literally bumping into David Law, and realise he's standing just having a casual, intimate chat with his good mate, Roger Federer. I mean, and all of my, the crew that I work with, cameraman, camera assistant, producer, they were all stood there, and a couple of other people as well that I didn't know, gazing at David Law, thinking, who is this rock star?
What, him or me?
Roger Federer is talking to. Honestly, it was, people just wanted to stand next to David Law afterwards, just hoping the cool would rub off on them.
Did they?
Yeah.
Good. Oh, I didn't know that. Oh, that's great. Excellent. We did have a little chat. I don't even know what to say. I'm a bit shy now.
Yeah, you were determined that you wouldn't bring that up in your commentary that you did for BBC Radio 5 Live.
You want me to spill the beans now?
Because there is no, you're quite right, there's no cool way to do that, and there would have been no cool way for you to bring it up on the podcast, but that's why I'm doing it for you, because it was one of the coolest things I've ever seen.
He's only a bloke, Catherine, basically.
I know, but he came over to you. He sought you out for a warm, lovely chat. And
I think he was just a bit bored waiting for Angelique Kerber's match to finish.
This is the punchline to this whole wonderful story, is that the chat wrapped up when Roger Federer glanced over at the score screen that's up for the benefit of the media in the interview, inverted commas, garden, and realised that Angelique Kerber was 4-2 in the deciding set, and he said, I'd probably go and get ready now. As in for my match that I'll be playing in about 12 minutes time
on the Rod Laver Arena in front of millions. No, it's true. I mean, he is that relaxed. I mean, that is what he's like. And I mean, just to give a little bit of context, I think I was at his professional debut when he was 16 years of age.
You were at the cow giving ceremony, more importantly.
I was at the cow giving ceremony when Juliet was handed over. But no, I mean, it's inevitably, given the fact that that obviously, you know, everybody wants to talk to Federer and so forth. I've not had many chances to speak to him over the years, but he is the sort of person who is quite comfortable to talk to anybody. And we had a little chat.
It wasn't that comfortable to talk to anybody else in that garden at that time.
But anyway, what is interesting about him is how curious he is about other people. And he spent most of our little chat asking me about my family and stuff like that, which I think is a measure of the character that he is. He's not self-obsessed. People perhaps don't realise that.
Yeah, I would completely agree with that. There are lots of tennis players that I've met and spent a lot of time with and liked a lot, you know, Champions Tour, all the rest of it. And then you'll suddenly get to the end of, like, I don't know, an hour-long conversation with them, and you'll realise they haven't asked you anything about yourself. You know, you almost get to the point of thinking you're friends with them, and then you realise they haven't ever asked you anything about yourself. And it really is, and you sort of forgive them it, because they don't really live on the same planet that you do, and you make allowances for these sorts of people that you don't make for other people in normal walks of life. But you're right, it is the marker of the really special ones on a human level that they do that. Should we stop, for the benefit of those handful of people that aren't Roger Federer fans, should we stop talking about how amazing it is?
Well, okay, we will. And I can't play you the contents of our conversation because I don't have them recorded. Plus, I can't. But what we can do is let you in and listen to the little chat we had in the interview room before the tournament started. And Roger Federer came into the interview room, first time we'd seen him in a long time, and I got an opportunity to ask him what it was like to be back.
I always felt like I was going to be here, so I'm happy I'm here though. That means the job was well done. Can thank my team for that. And it was an interesting last 6 months, to say the least.
You will remember, I imagine, what it was like to first become world number one, which is what Andy's obviously experiencing this week. Does it feel any different? Do you get looked at differently, do you feel? Do you have a different sense of perception?
I think it definitely feels different, yeah, because everybody comes up to you and says you're the best, you know, so you start walking around a bit differently, just feel more confident overall in your shots without having had to play. So it's a good thing, and usually when you win, you know, it solves everything. So from that standpoint, he's only won virtually the last 4 months, so I'm sure things have been very smooth for him and his life and family, everything's great, you know. What is there to talk negative about? So the negativity goes out of the door a little bit, and that's a good thing in tennis. When you can think positive and feel positive, that rubs off into match play. Then I guess you come to a point and you just can't let it affect you, and just you have to remind yourself how hard you had to work to actually get there, and it's going to require that plus more to stay there. But I feel like, because Andy's not, you know, 18 years old, he knows all about that. I don't think the ranking in this regard changes him in a big way. I think it's too laid back for him to also change because of it in terms of attitude towards us. And I'm super happy for him. He deserves it. He's been in there for a long time. He's had some tough losses, some great wins over the years, but he never kind of strung it together that it would pay off. So this time it did, and it's great for him, great for the sport.
And just from your perception as somebody who's played the role of number one in the world, upcoming player, you've dominated for many years. In many ways, this year, you're kind of an underdog. You talked about the unknown. You're kind of an underdog. Are you looking forward to being that?
Yeah, why not, for a change? I mean, I prefer to be the favourite, but underdog is okay. It's fine. You know, as long as I'm healthy and I feel like I can go 4 or 5 sets, I can, you know, go many matches in a row, then I think it's going to be fun. If I feel like I'm in pain in the matches, then obviously it's no fun, because then it almost doesn't matter what your seeding is and your ranking is, it's always the same. But no, it's a great draw because I'm in the draw, so for me I'm super pleased that I made it here and that I have an opportunity to win matches. How many will rest to be seen. I'm cautious myself. So, yeah, clearly an underdog this time around.
So there's Roger Federer, Catherine, who I got a chance to put some questions to in the press conference. And fascinating to hear him talk about Andy Murray and what it is like to be number one at your first Grand Slam tournament after becoming world number one. And it's quite interesting that, in turn, Murray was quite happy to downplay the impact and basically said he doesn't feel any different. Federer certainly was typically giving every bit of information he could about when he had that feeling. And also, I like the idea of Roger Federer, the underdog, which he was talking about as well in that little clip.
Well, he quite liked the idea of Roger Federer, the underdog, as well. He preferred the idea of Roger Federer, the favourite for the title. But, I mean, he's just so happy to be here. He's happy with any title, isn't he? I mean, I loved the line, it's a great draw because I'm in the draw. And he didn't mean that from a boastful point of view. He meant, it's great for me because I just want to be in tennis draws.
And he actually said that actually on the court after his match tonight, that even if he'd have lost, he'd have just been, he feels like he's won because he's managed to come back. When, I mean, at 35, after that injury, he might have been done. That could have been his career over. Thank goodness it's not over, and he will go on to the second round. He's got Noah Rubin next. He could have third round Thomas Burdick. We talked about that in our preview. Burdick went through today after his opponent retired.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hello, Tennis Podcast listeners. David here. Now, you might know that I love a bit of cooking, and I think I'm quite good at it. But if I'm honest, even I get fed up trying to work out what to do every night. That's where Home Chef comes in. Being able to put together a delicious meal without the long prep and the cook times, well, that's pretty cool. Home Chef provides fresh ingredients and chef-designed recipes conveniently delivered to your doorstep to simplify your cooking experience. They have over 30 options a week and serve a variety of dietary needs, so you don't have to worry about what to make ahead of time. Not only is it convenient, but it's economical too. Home Chef customers save an average of $86 per month on groceries. Now, for a limited time, Home Chef is offering Tennis Podcast listeners 18 free meals plus free dessert for life and, of course, free shipping on your very first box. Go to homechef.com/tennis. That's homechef.com/tennis for 18 free meals and free dessert for life. You heard it right. Other notable things on the men's side. You mentioned Dan Evans got a good win for him. So he's through to the second round, plays Marin Cilic, who came back from two sets to love down to beat Jerzy Janowicz. Andy Murray was not at his best today and looked to me, as he often looks actually in the first round of major tournaments, if he has a bit of a struggle, he can look pretty stressed out and pretty uncomfortable out there. Still got it done in straight sets, but he'll just be relieved, I think, to get through.
Relieved to get through in straight sets in those conditions as well. It's not as hot as it can be here, but I mean, it's all relative, you know. It was blooming hot out there, particularly on the Rod Laver Arena, which is pretty airless. So, he'll be relieved. I don't think he'll dwell on it too much. I don't think there's an enormous amount to take from it. I was just chatting with Mark Petrie on air at the end of the show, just now reflecting a little bit on Andy Murray. And he said, and in fact, it was something Andy himself commented on in quite great detail, actually, both when I spoke to him in the Flash interview immediately after the match and following the press conference, that he was quite surprised by how different the conditions are, particularly how different the balls are. They are using a different ball this year to previous years. He felt like they were really flying. Mark pointed out that he has always preferred the harder ball. It's one of the things that isn't nearly talked about enough in tennis, that, you know, you think a tennis ball is a tennis ball, and you'd certainly think that at this elite level that it would be so standardised that, you know, it'd be standardized beyond any comprehension. It's not, you know. Professional tennis players can tell blindfolded the difference between the balls at the different Grand Slams. I've seen them do it.
Dominika Sibulkova can do it by sniffing them.
Well, yeah, I mean, I saw Michael Lodger do it once just by feeling the weight the blindfolded, feeling the weight of a tennis ball. So, I mean, it really is a significant thing, and certainly Andy thought it was a significant thing in his match today. Dan Evans talked about it as well, that the balls are really flying. Mark Petchy doesn't think that will suit Andy particularly well. He doesn't think it's an enormous factor, but, you know, it's fine margins, isn't it, at this level of the game? So it's interesting. You know, it'll be an adjustment process, and it was an adjustment process throughout the course of the match. He was timing it better and better as it went on, I thought. But yeah, it's going to be an interesting feature of the tournament, I think.
Yeah, it is. So Andy Murray through, Roger Federer through, Stan Wawrinka had another Stan Wawrinka-type match that he seems to have in these Grand Slam tournaments. The mind went back to the one he had with Evans a little bit later in the US Open a few months ago, that he had match point down and he ended up winning the title, of course, for Wawrinka. But he proved again, or he gave weight probably to why nobody does pick him a lot of these tournaments. I had my rant about it a couple of days ago.
And didn't pick him. No,
I didn't pick him in the end. But I thought about it.
Well, that's it, isn't it? We all think about it. It's not that we don't think of him. We just don't say he's the favourite.
I've actually picked... I think I've picked Kyrgios to actually knock him out in about the fourth round. So, yeah, I mean... but today, I mean, he was right up against it, against Martin Kleesan. He was, I think, 4-3, break of serve, and 40-15 down in the fifth set. And he managed to break that serve, even though he was 40-15 down, to turn it around. I don't know whether you saw it. There was one... really eye-watering moment where Martin Kleesan went to the net and basically popped up a ball that was an easy put away, and Wawrinka hit the ball full pelt on the forehand side straight into the body of Kleesan, who was standing there defenceless. I said at the time in commentary, I said that is out of order. That is how it felt to me at the time, that the guy was just standing there with his arms by his side pretty much and got nailed by the ball. Now, Wawrinka immediately stepped over the net and was just mortified, it seemed to me, that he'd hit the guy with the ball. And my after initially seeing it, I thought, I guess he was just trying to hit it down the centre and so forth, and yes, at the body, but not to actually hurt him, because, I mean, the way he did it, it made you shudder. Thankfully, on very close at replays, it seemed that Kleesan did manage to get his racket just in front of him and deflect the ball. But goodness me, it could have been seriously dangerous. Anyway, it didn't hurt him, it appears, in the end, and all's well. But my conclusion is I'd give Wawrinka the benefit of the doubt. I don't think if that had been Lendl, I think Lendl would have hit it and walked back to the baseline and just left him there on the floor. Personally, but that's not Wawrinka.
That's the sort of aggro that you so long for.
It was kind of fun. I mean, you know, obviously I hammed it up on commentary a little bit. But anyway, so Wawrinka is through. Nishikori is another one who had five sets to get through. He looked a bit weary. I mean, it was pretty brutally hot out there. So none of the players really just serenely went through the first round today on the men's side. And it was pretty much the same in the women's side as well, because Halep lost and Kerber looked a little uncertain out there too.
Nick Kyrgios went through pretty serenely. Just
He was good. That
wasn't me giving you license to just wax lyrical about.
He's one of the players. A little insight into the Roger Federer chat. Kyrgios is one of the people we were talking about, and I get the sense that Roger Federer quite likes Nick Kyrgios. I think I know he's a classical purist and all the rest of it, but he's always quite liked a little bit of spice as well as Federer. And I mean, I think it's borderline. You know, I think he would probably think that Kyrgios sometimes oversteps it, but I think he kind of likes him.
That's not a subjective opinion, is it, that sometimes Nick Kyrgios oversteps the mark? Is it? That is objective fact, David. Anyway.
Yes, it is.
I didn't mean to open up a big Nick Kyrgios discussion, but he was fantastic today. Women's side, Halep out again in the first round. What's she playing at?
Well, she was injured, I think. She actually said that she'd got an injury and she couldn't move properly. But at the same time, I certainly heard one or two of the respected commentators saying that actually, yes, I'm sure she is injured, but sometimes, this does happen quite a lot with Halep, sometimes she has to just suck it up and get through these matches when she's not feeling great. Muguruza had her leg strapped up, she went 3-love down, still won the match. I don't know how serious Simona Halep's injury was. I guess, again, benefit of the doubt, because we don't know. But, yeah, terrible shame anyway that she was not able to play her best. I mean, good performance in the end from her opponent, Shelby Rogers.
Yeah, Shelby Rogers, who's, you know, been to the quarterfinal of a slam before. She did it in Paris last year, I think. So, you know, she's not too shabby an opponent at all. But, and I suppose any kind of movement hampering injury for Halep is pretty decimating, really, to her form, isn't it? Because she, in fact, I saw a there's all sorts of new stats and graphics and stuff available this year. They do not let the grass grow here at this tournament, and they're available to the media, and all the analytics say that Halep is the fastest female player. Dominic Thiem, incidentally, the fastest. No, Djokovic, the fastest male player. Dominic Thiem was something, but not the fastest.
Was he the hardest worker?
No, Andy Murray was the hardest worker.
Thiem plays every 5 minutes.
Let's not get onto that. Anyway, yeah, so Simona Halep was the fastest, and that's obviously her biggest weapon. So any kind of, you know, wound to that area of her game is pretty critical. But yeah, you could well be right. I mean, she does have a bit of form, I suppose, but still a shame. Muguruza, your prediction was looking a bit ropey for a while.
I was getting a bit worried when she had the trainer on and she went 3-love down in the second set. I'm thinking, oh great. I mean, I, you know, in the competition we've had on Kickstarter with our predictions tournament, I've actually picked Muguruza to end the year world number one as well. So, you know, I've half nailed my colours to the mast a little bit.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, they're nailed. They're nailed on there.
She's still in there. I tell you, she could still win it. She will still win it.
Who else have we got? We've Kerber. I mean, it was ropey, wasn't it, at times? So it was really ropey. That was, I mean, yeah, it's exactly what I expected, really. That body language was awful. She was so down on herself and hard on herself and just didn't look like a world number one. She looked, to me, just exhausted, that sort of slightly hollow look behind the eyes. I just, you know, wanted someone to give her a hug. And I say that a lot, don't I? Yeah, I'm glad she got through. But
it's one of those, though, I think. I was talking to a couple of colleagues of mine who, we kind of feel that if you win a couple, get into the tournament, and that's what she was talking about before the tournament, is you've got to win a couple to start feeling part of it. I think the whole circus of being world number one and defending champion, I think coming in here has been the first time she's thought, actually, you know, I could do without this. Not that she doesn't want to be world number one. She just wishes everybody just let her get on with it now, really, and play the match.
Yeah.
But you can't.
No, you can't. And then, of course, when you lose, you don't get to play any more matches. That's you done, isn't it? You have to go. So losing early, as she has done in her preparation tournaments, that means she hasn't been able to get any momentum going and hasn't had the tennis to distract her from the distractions other than tennis. So, yeah, I think you could be right. I do think you're right. If she can just scrape through these, and I think the next one could be a scrape as well.
Witthoft, she's got next, and then it could be Kristina Pliskova, the big left-handed sister of Karolina. Incidentally, though, there won't be any Daria Kasatkina, so there's one of my predictions that's gone horribly wrong, because I thought she was getting to the quarterfinals. She's lost today. Eugenie Bouchard was a big winner. So lots and lots of results have already been in today. Now, tomorrow, Catherine Whittaker, BBC Radio 5 Live, Eurosport, with their exclusive rights on TV, are going to be bringing from 11 o'clock local time, so it'll be midnight in the UK, 7 p.m. in the United States on the East Coast, this will be. Karolina Pliskova starts on the Rod Laver Arena, and then it is Belinda Bencic against Serena Williams. Belinda Bencic is a very bright character. She came into the press conference the other day, very bubbly, really excited. She seemed absolutely thrilled that she'd drawn Serena Williams, which I suppose the fact she beat her a couple of years back, I mean, that must give you some confidence.
I think so, yeah. I mean, I interviewed her after that, sort of a preview for the match that we'll be showing on Eurosport tomorrow. It's going to be a bit of a juggle. Luckily, there's Eurosport 1 and Eurosport 2, because I think with all the Brits playing on
Margaret Court,
yeah, both channels are going to be well employed tomorrow. Yeah, I spoke to her after that press conference yesterday, and she, yeah, you're right, she seemed completely genuinely delighted to have drawn Serena Williams. She's just in a win-win situation as she sees it. I mean, I guess she feels she already had nothing to lose with coming off here off the back of an absolutely torrid year or so, and a tricky start to the season with the toenail injury, and now she's got an opportunity to have a stab at taking out Serena Williams. I mean, there couldn't be less pressure on her shoulders, could there? And she knows, I mean, yes, it seems like a different time in her very short career that she beat Serena in Toronto a year and a half ago now, but she knows she can do it. You know, she's the same human being. She's the same flesh and bones that beat Serena not so long ago. So why not?
We've then got Rafael Nadal.
I say why not. I do think Serena's going to win.
Me too. We've then got Rafael Nadal up against Florian Mayer of Germany. Nadal looked as though he's really up for this. When he was in the press conference room a couple of days ago, he was being all polite about his chances in the early part of the press conference. Then at the end he said, look, if I didn't think I could do what I've been doing for the last 10 years, I'd be playing golf or fishing. He was pretty categoric that he thinks he's got a chance to compete for this title here.
Whereas Federer on court after his match today said he finds fishing too slow. Can't be doing with fishing.
Interesting. I find it a bit slow.
I mean, it's about as slow as it gets, isn't it?
Yeah. You can keep that one, Rafa. Fernando Verdasco against Novak Djokovic is the first match in the evening session. Cool, that's going to be good, isn't it? You think it's going to be a dismantling, though? Djokovic is going to dismantle.
I think Djokovic will win. I think there will be one tight set. I think, you know, maybe 7-6 or 7-5, 6-4, 6-3, something like that. I think it's not going to be a Doha, or unlikely to be a
Where
Doha.
Where Verdasco had 5 match points before Djokovic eventually prevailed. Then it's Svetlana Peronkova against Agnieszka Radwanska. As Catherine said, it is a Brit fest on Margaret Court Arena, starting with Johanna Konta at 11 o'clock local time against Kirsten Flipkins. That's midnight UK on Eurosport and on BBC Radio 5 Live Sports Extra. We've got Milos Raonic against Dustin Brown, Heather Watson against Sam Stosur. That's a good one. Then in the evening session on the Margaret Court Arena, Dimitrov's in action, and then Naomi Brody. So they're all playing. Kyle Edmund is on one of the outside courts as well. So lots and lots to follow tomorrow. I do love the first couple of days of the season. Kyle Edmund up against Santiago Geraldo, second on court number 5. That, Catherine Whittaker, is about that. It's well after midnight. We're sitting here. There's nobody left. There's only us two here. Where's everybody gone?
They haven't got podcasts to record, obviously.
Well, they're the unlucky ones, because we get to talk to all of you. Hope you have enjoyed the show. If you would like to get the Eurosport player, there's a special offer at the moment, £19.99 for the whole year. You could get the Australian Open, you could get the French Open, you can get the US Open coverage on the Eurosport player. That's not a bad deal. You get to see Catherine Whittaker doing her stuff at the Australian Open.
That's everyone sold, isn't it?
There you are, Catherine. Hear all your interviews and see all your link-ups with the studio. But that's all to come over the next couple of weeks. You've got plenty to follow on Eurosport and on BBC Radio 5 Live Sports Extra. We'll be back tomorrow at midnight as well in the UK. And as a tram goes past outside, I think we need to go and run after that, Catherine, and go and catch it so we can go home and get to bed at a reasonable hour. Thank you for listening. This has been the Tennis Podcast, brought to you in association with The Telegraph and Eurosport. We'll speak to you tomorrow.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to Quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.